Gaming Uncensored is brought to you by Colonel Duff. Duff, helping a random handicapped guy in the middle of nowhere. Only on Gaming Uncensored.
Controlling transmission.
Divided by 1,000 miles of barren wasteland, two men mysteriously linked by alien technology on a podcasting mission to boldly deliver video game news and views directly to your brain. This is Gaming Uncensored. Now, your Gaming Uncensored guides, the dynamic duo, the video game gurus, a man on wheels, and a Yeti with a modem, Jamie and Tommy.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. How you doing? My name is Jamie Jordan. Tommy's sitting over there. What's up, man?
Not much, man. We're trying to figure this thing out. So, we got a lot of stuff to talk about today, though.
Yes, we do.
Going to be exciting. And so, really quick, we'll give you the show rundown and we'll talk about the headaches of trying to do something new. We're going to talk about some game addiction stuff today, which will be interesting. We'll get to that in just a little bit. The Steam Summer Sale is here, and Sony not playing nice with everybody else. And so, we've got good stuff to talk about on today's show. Before we get into all that, we've been trying to figure out tech and new things and all of that. So, how you doing, man?
All right, so we've been doing this a long time, and we did this show for a lot of years without alcohol, and I'm starting to wonder how we ever did this show without alcohol, because it seems to be more and more necessary every single week.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
It's, So I'm good. Everything's good. I have a technology story that I can put now, or we can do that later. It will make you laugh.
I'm all for laughing at technology right now. I'm a little tired of it, so okay, go ahead.
So I have this nice, shiny new gaming rig. It's not new anymore. You have one, and it's great, right?
Sure.
But I have been trying to stay on top of keeping things up to date. So this week I looked, and a new BIOS was available for my computer.
Nice.
And I have updated the BIOS with this one several times. That's not something that I had previously done, but with this machine I thought, I'm going to do that, right? So I went to update it. It updated. It was all good. It rebooted, and it was like, Windows needs to repair your computer. Right?
Yeah.
And so I'm like, that's not good.
Right.
So I try and figure out what's going on. Can't figure out what's going on. I call Gigabit, and the guy tells me to do a couple things. And then he says, well, that didn't work. Reinstall Windows. And so, like, I'm freaking out on the phone because I'm like, dude, I just did that.
Right?
Like, I don't want to do that again. He's like, well, that's the answer. So I got mad and started throwing stuff and tried to figure out what I was going to do. And, of course, I had to find a Windows install. So I went to work and told one of the guys at work that I needed a copy of Windows to reinstall. Got the USB thumb drive, all that good stuff. Brought it home. And realized last night that my computer was trying to boot into Windows 7.
Nice.
Right? And I'm like, that's not right, because this machine has never had Windows 7. So I start looking, and it turns out the firmware update screwed up the boot order of my machine, and it was trying to boot to the wrong freaking hard drive. I told it which drive to boot to, and it booted right up.
Yeah.
So I'm saying to myself, if I was ever known as an IT professional, I should just quit.
Yeah,
I'm done. I'm old. That's it.
That's brutal and fair. I had a similar experience right before you got here for E3, where I had added a hard drive in, and it was trying to boot from the wrong drive, and took me much longer than it should have to figure that out.
So. Well, I would have never thought that the BIOS would change the boot drive. Like, no clue.
Yeah.
So that's technology for you, sir.
Yes. I understand. And we just went through a nightmare with Skype. And Skype, stop being terrible. On a side note, if you have a suggestion of a program we should use other than Skype to do this show, we are all ears.
Not only are we all ears, we have to have it or this show ain't happening. So we need...
I've got an old version of Skype running now because their new update is awful. Just terrible. So yeah, as long as we got the old version running, we can do what we need to do. But yeah, we need to move off of Skype. So if you've got a suggestion of something other than Skype that would work well for us.
Or Discord, because Discord does not work with our hardware.
That's the thing, is there's always hardware issues. But we'll try it. So gaminguncensored@gmail.com. Send them our way. So... Yeah. All that being said, we're here. This is the first official 1 hour show, and so we're gonna have to move because we got lots of stuff to talk about. I do want to take just a second right here at the top of the show to mention our Patreon supporters: Cabbage, Jose, Narc, Duff, Josh, Hector, Spider, Spencer, Kavash, Chad, and Zeke. Zeke, who is new, I think this might be Zeke's first shout out, second shout out on the show. We didn't do that during E3 at all. I didn't even think about it during E3. So apologies, all you guys, that we didn't mention you during our E4 coverage. You are appreciated, and we should have.
They were mentioned on the roundtable, so we didn't completely
completely screw up, but we do appreciate it. We promise, and so thank you guys for your support. Obviously, so we are here to try to get this show done in the next 54 minutes or so, and so we're gonna see what happens. The good news is,
do you see why I was terrified?
I know. The good news is you were just in my house a week ago, and so, like, we're more up to date with each other than we usually are when we sit down to do a show. I will mention, though, we'll talk a little bit about games and we'll jump into the news. I will mention I've played a little bit more God of War since last we spoke.
And I have been watching that. I have one video left. I'm fairly...
It's just freaking amazing,
yes,
isn't it?
Yes, it is. It is unfreaking believable. I just finished the video where the Atreus was like, hey, we're on the last leg up to the mountain. Can I carry Mom? And Kratos is like, no. and so I'm like, wow, this is really short. And then you figure out that it's not going to be short at all.
Not at all.
It's going to be really long. And I'm really excited because it just keeps getting better and better and better. And I love the way that they are working the Nine Realms into God of War.
Yes.
If you're into Thor at all, you're gonna love this.
Yeah. I agree. It's really cool. It feels cool. For a while I was, because like they were showing the map everywhere, like online I'd seen the map, and like it was a big leak before the game came out or whatever, and I every time I saw it I was like, that doesn't look that impressive, you know, like I was like, whatever, like I don't care, I know it's going to be a good game, but the just like the excitement over the map never got me. Now that I'm playing the game and you get into like this in-between realms thing, I go, oh, that's the cool part, like the maps, whatever. But like, this takes that map that looked kind of meager and makes it much, much deeper. You know, like it's literally got depth to it now. And so there's this whole kind of another approach to how you navigate through this game.
And holy crap, can we talk about depth? Because I've been wanting to ask you this question. Because I offhandedly commented that it is very RPG-ish, and it just keeps getting deeper, at least the way that I'm looking at it.
Yeah.
Seems like you can tweak everything. I'm loving this thing.
It's a really good balance of, like, staying true to God of War and it being an action game first, because it is an action game first. It's action-oriented combat with RPG elements to it. But it does feel like it's a different level of kind of the RPG stuff than what it has been before, with the crafting and the runes and the skills and all that kind of stuff. And especially because previously with God of War, such a big focus was the weapons, and you'd get different weapons that have different abilities. But in this one, it's not. You have the axe, and that's really your primary weapon throughout, it feels like. I think you get some other stuff, maybe. I don't know. We're not that far yet. But really, the axe is the primary thing, and that's the focal point of the game, it feels like. And so instead of it being weapon-based is what gives you new abilities, you choose kind of how you play, what skills you want to do. And so I've been figuring that out as we go, kind of. And so one of the things I figured out is, like, throwing the axe is really, really useful, which I didn't do at the first part of the game. Like, I just didn't see it as being that helpful. And then there's some enemies where you don't have much of a choice, and I was like, oh wow, this is actually kind of great. And now I use it all the time. Now I'm like, chunk that axe at people, because you can hit them when you throw it, and then you have to call your axe back to you. And so if you line it up right, you can hit them when the axe comes back as well. And so it's like you get two hits on a guy, and it's some guys that kills, and it's really handy. And so there was a part where I was almost dead that I just took down the enemies by running away and throwing my axe at them the whole time.
I saw that,
which wasn't probably the most exciting way to take them out, but it worked, you know, like, well, I lived.
And that's the thing with this game in general, is it's a very edge of your seat kind of thing, because you think you're doing good, and then somebody hits you, and it's like, oh, crap, dude's going to die. Like,
yep.
Like, you don't have a lot of room to maneuver. You get hit, it hurts.
Yeah.
And I really am having fun, because, it, like, there is very little room for error.
Yeah. The combat is way more tactical than it's ever been in God of War. Like, God of War always, to me, was just hack and slash. And then there were some bosses where you got to learn the patterns and kind of do some other stuff. And so, like, those were the challenging bosses. But in the kind of primary just gameplay of running through hordes of enemies, which this game also doesn't really just have the hordes of enemies that previous Gods of War did, but you would just be a button masher for the most part, that you're just hacking and slashing through them. This one, like, you have to block, you have to parry, you have to be tactical with just about every enemy type. And you, like I said, you don't run into just wave after wave after wave. When you run into enemies, you know that it's going to be a fight. For the most part, they're not just like throwaway fights. Just about every encounter you have, like, they either introduce a new enemy type, or they put in a stronger enemy that you've already encountered before. And so now, instead of it taking, you know, 10 hits for that guy to kill you, it takes 2. And that makes you a lot more aware in figuring out patterns and parry behaviors and all that kind of stuff, which makes the combat a lot more fun and engaging. And ultimately, I die more often, but it's more rewarding when you get through some of those fights. You know, sometimes you just hack and slash your way through something. It's like, well, that was cool and gory, but whatever. Like this one, you finish a fight and you're like, man, I feel kind of awesome. You know, like, I accomplished something there. That was cool.
Yeah. The other part of that I wish Cabbage was here, because he wants to talk about God of War so bad. And I understand why, because you got all of that, and then you got a compelling story.
Yes.
Like, the story is compelling. I don't know what the deal is with the witch, but I want to find out. Like, she wants to go some places she wants to help, but every time she goes, she gets sucked back. Right. And like, I want to know what the deal is with that. Plus, seems like she got a little thing for Kratos. I don't know, it just sort of looks that way. And he's like, no, I don't have time, go away.
Yeah.
And so, I kind of like where this is going. Story's great, action's great.
Yeah. Can I tell you really quick, one of my favorite parts of the game so far, the little details that they put in are really great.
Yes.
I love that Atreus asks Kratos to, like, tell him stories. And, like, the first time Kratos is like, no, I'm not going to tell you a story. That's stupid. But then he starts, like, telling him stories. And they're just the worst stories. It just cracks me up. Like, no, it's like I would just, like, paddle around in the Lake of the Nine to, like, hear Kratos tell stories because they're hilarious on how bad they
are. You know what I want? Here's what I want. And maybe we should produce this and put it out. I want to do something called Story Time with Kratos.
Yes.
And not from the game. I want Story Time with Kratos to be like him reading nursery rhymes.
Yes.
Like, that's what I want.
Just that dude and that voice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Reading, like, nursery rhymes with that dry, like, you know, I'm going to tell you the facts and nothing else.
No drama to it. No inflection to the voice.
And
boy.
That's it, exactly. And I love that Atreus pipes in and he goes, man, you're really bad at this.
Atreus is, I was kind of worried he was just going to be a really obnoxious character, but I actually really like him as a character because he's the counterpoint of Kratos, and it's executed really well. And so that was an honest worry I had about the game coming in, is that that little boy in the game was just going to be obnoxious little boy, but he's actually really pretty funny, and there's a good chemistry between those two characters that works out well. So yeah, I'm digging it. I think it's awesome, and wish I had time to play it quicker and more often. But we're getting through it, and that's good.
It's really good, and I haven't played a lot of stuff. I meant to play this week, and then my computer forgot where Windows was installed. So I haven't really had time to play anything. Although, I do have Fallout 4 and The Witcher 3 loaded to start. But I will say, I don't know if we've talked about this. We got to get to news because we're short on time here. But The Witcher, I did not realize. I don't think we talked about it on this show. But do you know there is 5 or 6 novels that go with that? And the first one was written in 1986.
Yeah. Like, that's where the whole world originated from.
Apparently, that thing is Game of Thrones deep.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I'm looking at that. I found that out because I did what you did and did the little story recap thing.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, wait, I need more info. And I texted Cabbage and I'm like, and I was going to talk to you about it because I don't know when it's going to get done. I think one of the Gaming Uncensored special projects needs to be going through the entire Witcher series.
That would be cool.
1, 2, and 3. That needs to be a Gaming Uncensored special project where you and I go through it and we talk about it on video and, like, I want to know if Patreon would pay for that because I'm excited about The Witcher 3, but I want to play the other two, and we have consoles and stuff, and I'm thinking there's got to be a way that the first two don't suck somewhere.
Yeah.
You know,
and I think at this point on our PC, I haven't tried to load up The Witcher 2 on my new PC.
The Witcher 1 does load on mine, and I'm thinking about loading it.
Yeah, and it did on mine, too. It just broke my save when I was, like, 5 or 10 hours into the game, which is what pissed me off, and I didn't come back to it. And so if that bug still exists, I would not be happy. So whatever. But yes, I agree. It would be lovely to go back and actually experience those games because The Witcher 3 is so freaking good.
Yes.
All that being said, shall we jump into to news for the day?
Yes, let's do that.
So I mentioned there at the top of the show that that gaming addiction was going to be part of what we're talking about. So this came out this past week. The World Health Organization, better known as WHO, has officially added to their giant document, which you can find at the show notes, gamingandcensored.com, that is titled, this is cheerful, ICD-11 for Mortality and Morbidity Statistics.
Wow.
Mortality and Morbidity. Good times. They have added gaming disorder as one of the many disorders under the disorders due to substance use or addictive behaviors. And obviously not substance, and so it's addictive behavior. It falls under gambling. Gambling is 6C50. Gaming disorder is 6C51. So it makes sense. So I'm going to read you really quick the description, and then we can talk about this a little bit. It's a topic that's come up on the show before, but it's interesting now that this is kind of officially designated as a disorder. And so their description for gaming disorder is it's characterized by a pattern of persistent or recurrent gaming behavior, digital gaming or video gaming, parenthetically, which may be online, i.e. over the internet, thank you guys, or offline, manifested by one, impaired control over gaming, meaning the onset, frequency, intensity, duration, termination, context, etc. 2, increasing priority given to gaming to the extent that gaming takes precedence over other life interests and daily activities. And 3, continuation or escalation of gaming despite the occurrence of negative consequences. So that's what they mean by disorder, is that you lack control, that it gives priority over other things in your life, and that you keep doing it even after other things go badly. Which all seems fair to me. Now, the question is that something that should be classified as an addiction or a disorder in this way? Have we seen enough evidence that this is an existing problem?
Why not? Everything else is considered a disorder. I mean, you got disorders for everything.
Yes.
And so that would apply to this as well. And this is sort of... this is sort of something that we talked about off the air when I was at your house, and we have video coming up to sort of demonstrate this. But as part of the documentary that we put together, I don't know when that's going to be ready, but as part of the documentary that we put together, I went to the casino for the first time. Never done that. That I'd never had a chance. And that was something that we did on the way. And what struck me was you walk in and there's rows and rows and rows of slot machines. And there are people that sit there all day. There are people that sit there for an entire weekend. And that's what they do. And there's as far as I can tell, there's no skill or tactic to it. Really? Right. You just sit there and press a button and you either win or you don't. And, like, there's people that this is their thing. Like, my assistant, this is her thing. This is what she does to relax. And when you go and when you see that, when you see those people, it's kind of scary. Like, I was talking to one guy while she was playing, and I offhandedly said with a smile that she didn't know when to quit. And I think, and he looks at me and he goes, yeah, I think that's a problem most of us have.
Right.
And I'm like, and so, like, I agree that it's a disorder. I just don't know how many people actively have it.
And I think that's the key point. And I think gambling is a good analog to this because I do believe that people have serious issues with gambling. Like there are people that get addicted to gambling, they get obviously in a lot of trouble monetarily in that world. A good thing about gaming potentially is it doesn't necessarily have the same effect monetarily. Now, it has a lot of other effects and can ultimately have that effect monetarily if you have a gaming addiction that manifests also through your need to purchase like loot boxes or whatever in a game that it will take on. You would imagine a lot of the same kind of forms of a gambling addiction or a gambling disorder. But I think the big thing with both of those is it's not a substance dependency. We think of addictions like to drugs or alcohol or whatever, that there's a substance dependency there. This is much more a psychological dependency, but nonetheless a serious dependency that I think that some people have, but I imagine many fewer than a lot of people who will look at this and say, oh yeah, that's my kid. He plays video games all the time. It's like, okay, there's a difference between somebody who plays video games a lot and maybe plays video games too much by whatever metric you want to have that on, and somebody who's got a legit disorder, a legit problem with this. And so being somebody who plays a lot of video games doesn't mean like that you have a gaming disorder.
Yesterday on Steam, because the summer sale was happening, we'll get to that in a little bit, but I was looking on Steam yesterday. I have 70 hours in Mankind Divided. I have no idea how I got there because I'm only halfway through the game. And I haven't been able to sit down for more than an hour or two at a time.
Sure.
And so, like I said, I don't know what that number is. I don't know if somebody who goes to work and they go home and they eat and they sit down in front of a console for the rest of the night until they go to bed. Is that person addicted? I don't know.
Yeah, I wouldn't characterize it that way if you're holding down a job. You know, like that's right. Already like your ability to time manage enough to eat, sleep, and hold down a job would take you out of the realm of this kind of disorder, I would think. And I would think that the World Health Organization would agree with that characterization. Again, this is pretty extreme.
Right.
It's just going to be like when somebody who isn't in this world sees this as a thing, they'll go, oh yeah, I know somebody who's got a gaming disorder or is addicted to video games or whatever. It's like, no, you don't really, probably, you know, like I don't know anybody that's legit addicted to video games.
Right.
Like I know people who play more video games than I think they probably should, but that's a different thing than being addicted to video games. I wish I could play more video games. You know,
there was a story on the radio about an NHL hockey prospect that is probably going to lose his spot in the NHL because he can't stop playing Fortnite. Like, he's missing practices.
That sounds legit. falls into this category.
He's got millions and millions and millions of dollars going to him if he can pull his head out of his butt. But he's got a series, like, he cannot put down Fortnite.
That's crazy. And maybe I should be laughing about it. Maybe that's callous of me to be chuckling about. Somebody who's in a privileged position like that is a little easier to poke fun at. But hey, like I get it. Like I don't worry about gambling. We talked about this after you talked to me about your casino experience. Like it's like I don't get it. It's not my thing. That doesn't trigger anything for me that I want to keep doing it and spending money on it or whatever, you know. But we all have our things. Like we have things that we either have poor self-control on or abuse.
We like to eat.
That's exactly where I was thinking too. It's like I find a lot of comfort in food, you know, and so that's a place where I can get out of control. Now I don't think I have an eating disorder of any kind, but it's a place where I don't use good common sense a lot of times, and so I think we all have a proclivity to get caught up in something if we put ourselves in that position. For some people, that's going to be gaming. I do know people who got so obsessed over World of Warcraft, for instance, that they like destroyed friendships over a stupid game, you know? And I'm just like, I couldn't understand that. Like, it's just such a silly thing to me to legit like throw away friendships, like good friendships, over a video game and stuff like that. Even that, I do know people who dealt with that. Maybe that kind of falls under this at least a little bit. That's just sad, you know? Like, it's just, it's right. heartbreaking that people would fall into something like that. So, that being said, I think overall it's probably a good thing to at least acknowledge that gaming can have this effect, and for some people that it's a problem and something to look into. And for most people, it's not. Again, it's not everybody who plays video games is addicted to video games.
Yeah.
Takeaway there. So, you mentioned the Steam Summer Sale. So, if you like video games, that's a really good time to go buy a bunch of video games. And so, I'll ask you, what have you seen on the Steam Summer Sale that's piqued your interest?
Well, I have. It's only been going on for a day. This is day two, and I have not had time to look for day two. But the one thing that I want the most out of what I've got on my wish list already, and I put it at the top of my wish list, hint, is the Metro bundle, which has Metro Redux and Last Light, and it's $10. And Metro is another one of those that has several novels to it that are actually on Audible, which I didn't realize, but there's four or five Metro novels. And so now I'm really intrigued by Metro. So that's one that looks good to me. They have, if you do not own Fallout 4, I saw they have Fallout 4 Game of the Year edition for $30, and that includes the game and all the DLC so far, I think.
Yeah, I believe you're right on that.
So if you don't own that, go get it, because that's probably a pretty good deal.
Yeah, and if you just want Fallout 4, it's $15, which is right. pretty killer as well. And so if you're not interested in all the other stuff, just want to play through Fallout 4, do that. I'll mention, too, a couple other ones. We talked about The Witcher a second ago. The Witcher 3 is $20 right now if you haven't played The Witcher and you're into RPGs, if you like Skyrim, if that kind of thing does it for you, you should play The Witcher 3. You don't have to play the first two games. I didn't play the first two games. You can go do what Jamie did and find it. It's the exact same thing I did before I played The Witcher 3. Find a little recap. It'll fill you in on the story enough. But it does a good job of kind of explaining the world for you. It's fantastic. Doom is $15. There was a couple others that I saw. I picked up Assassin's Creed Origins. That was the one I was really looking for. It is half off, so it was $30. It's still an expensive buy, but for as crazy as everybody's been about that game,
we got Patreon, so that's all
that's right.
good.
It does make it a lot easier when you guys are buying games for us. So thank you, Patreon guys, for buying games for us. Also, I picked up Rust, which is 75% off right now. It's only $8.74 on Steam. This is the online survival game that is at least somewhat inspirational towards Fallout 76. I've been wanting to play this one for a while since I played The Long Dark, which is a single-player survival game. This is online multiplayer survival. I don't know if I'll enjoy it that much or not, but for $8.74, I thought I would give it a shot. All kinds of other stuff. Obviously, the Steam Summer Sale, Steam sales in general just always have tons and tons of things. And so out of my, I think, 50 things I have on my wish list, like 38 of them are on sale right now. So
Hellblade is the other one. It's a new
Hellblade,
sacrifice.
Yes.
Need to pick that up if you haven't picked it up yet. We haven't picked that up, but
yeah,
but
we
I'm,
do need to do that.
I'm looking forward to that. Nier,
also,
Nier
I'll mention
is also on sale.
Oh, is it really? I didn't
yeah,
that.
I well, no, well, wait a minute. It may not be.
Yeah, I'll check.
I don't think it is actually.
I'll mention really quick while I'm looking. The other big, it's not, by the way, still $60 for Nier. That's
right.
A bummer because that's one I was looking forward to. Steam Link is also on sale for $2.50.
Yeah.
I hadn't really had any interest in Steam Link, but I picked one up just because it's $2.50. Might as well try it and see if it's useful. And if it's not, it's not that big of an investment. So, yeah, I figured it was worth picking one up just to play with it at $2.50.
I was actually going to suggest that we buy one for the show.
Yep, well, we did.
Okay, good. So somebody, can we talk about real quick how that deal exactly works? It connects your PC to your TV.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's like a set-top box so that you can play games on your TV from your PC. I don't understand all the technical side of it. I honestly just haven't looked into it very closely. Who was somebody did a segment recently? Was it?
We had two guys. It was Brigham and somebody else.
That we're talking about Steam Link right. stuff. And so, that piqued my interest of needing to try it out. And so we'll see what happens with that. Again, if it sucks, whatever. It was $250. You know, like if it's not that useful, it's worth trying out for,
now,
for $250.
Here's what I wondered. Maybe somebody can tell me this because I'm actually thinking, because the accessibility controller is coming out, I'm actually thinking of running an HDMI cable from my PC to my TV, because I'm going to want to play those games on the biggest screen possible.
Sure.
So what does the Steam Link offer that I can't do just by doing that?
Not having to run cables across your room or across your house, ultimately. Well, you know, like your setup where your big TV is on your desk next to your PC isn't typical of everybody.
Right.
And so, I obviously, if you have that set up, I think you're in the better position to just run a cable. That's probably going to give you a better experience.
But at the same time, I may pick one up because it's $250.
Right. Why not just have one so you can play with it and maybe find some really useful outlet for it as a media server or something? Who knows? Like, I haven't looked. I'm sure there's like some cool hacks for it or whatever. For $250, I just like I saw that and was kind of like I don't feel like I can not pick this up. Like,
well,
I just need one to play with.
I don't really have use for it, but you've now convinced me that for $2.50 I need to go right. buy one. So there's that.
There's that. And there's a ton of other good games, as always, on the summer sale. So let us know what you're playing, what you pick up, or what you think we should look into. If you have any suggestions, gamingcensored@gmail.com or over at the Twitter @podcastgu. Hit us up there. Our boy Zeke actually hit us up on Twitter asking for some suggestions. So I sent him some names of some games that were on sale that I suggested to check out. And so, yeah.
Nice.
Over there. Quickly, we'll talk about Sony, because this is the other big thing we need to get to today. Sony just not playing nicely with everybody else. So this started during E3, and we didn't ever really talk about it in our E3 coverage. I wanted to, we just ran out of time, and so we'll drop it in here. So of course, during E3, we got Fortnite coming to the Switch. Full disclosure here: you or I, neither one are into Fortnite, not our thing. Whatever.
No.
Right? But that's okay. This is still kind of a symptom of a bigger problem, I think, with Sony. So what a lot of people found out is that when they tried to log into their Epic Fortnite account on their Switch, which they've already have this set up if they've been playing it on PlayStation 4 or ultimately any other system, but it only is a problem if you've set your Epic's game account to link with your PlayStation 4. When they tried to set it up with the Nintendo Switch, it wouldn't let them. It's their account is tied essentially to their PlayStation 4, and it won't let them do it to attach that account to a different console. Like, you had to go set up a new Epic Games account that you could then use on your Switch, which apparently will work fine on your PC or your Xbox One or whatever else, just not between the PlayStation 4 and the Switch. Also lacking crossplay there. And so add to that, Minecraft just released their crossplay that works for mobile, PC, Switch, and Xbox One. And they actually even put out an ad with Microsoft and Nintendo of, like, the best way to play Minecraft is together. And it has, like, somebody playing on Xbox One and somebody playing on Nintendo Switch. And there's this great kind of, you know, kumbaya moment of, you know, cross-console play. Of course, missing from that is Sony. Sony is not participating in the cross-platform play on Microsoft or on Minecraft either. Is Sony just screwing up here? Like, is this a big deal? Am I making a bigger deal out
no,
of this than it should be?
It's a huge deal. And the reason it's a huge deal is during E3, somebody mentioned that Microsoft guy actually mentioned that they would like the accessibility controller to work on the PlayStation 4
yes.
and all other consoles, which I thought was fantastic. But like you said in the open to this story, Sony does not play well with other people. And it makes me sad because the PlayStation 4 is what I need to play most. And it is totally their right to do this, but if everybody else is doing crossplay, you need to be doing crossplay.
Yeah, I agree 100%. And I think it's just a bad look for Sony. Like, it's just a bad PR thing. And they put out this completely wishy-washy statement of, we listen to our consumers and we'll do what our consumers feel best, or whatever. You know, this non-committal PR spiel that just is ridiculous, whatever. It just makes you look really bad in a community of gamers, broadly speaking, that wants to play games with other people regardless of what platforms they're on, and either play games across multiple platforms or know people who play games across multiple platforms. And so it's just, if like Fortnite's your thing, and this is, or Minecraft's your thing, let's be clear, both of those are not our thing. We just don't have any interest in both of those things. And so Sony's okay with us because we're interested in God of War and The Last of Us and the things that they do well. But if Fortnite's your thing or Minecraft's your thing, like, you're going to turn your nose up to Sony, and I don't blame you, and you're going to miss out on the things that Sony does really well, and that's Sony's fault for not trying to be a part of this community. And for whatever reason, I don't understand, like, the kind of tepid reason that they give for not participating in these things is that they can't control the online communities from these other platforms. And it's, if some way that Sony gamers are not pricks, you know, like if you play on PlayStation Network, that you're not going to run into cursing 12-year-olds, but you do on Switch or Xbox One, and that's just ridiculous. Like, every one of them has their terrible part of their community that's no fun to play with, you know. Like, the idea that Sony needs to be able to regulate those people and that's why they don't want to participate is silly when they just have a ton of those people on their platform as well. Like, the gaming community is pretty similar across all these different platforms. You're going to have lots of good people that are on there, and you're going to have some poisonous people that are going to be a part of the community. It doesn't really matter what platform you're playing on. And so Sony using that as an excuse is pretty weak.
I mean, the fact that there's cross-play on the Switch, like, if Nintendo can pull it off and make it happen, this is Nintendo we're talking about.
Yeah.
Who really, really, really blows it online. Sony, you have no excuse.
Agreed.
No excuse whatsoever.
Yeah, you're 100% correct. When Nintendo is making you look bad in the online world, you're doing something wrong. Like, it just, yeah, it's not a good look. And apparently Fortnite on Switch is working really well, and crossplay is good, and there's like native voice chat built in, which everybody was super excited about, like all this stuff. And then the story is, and Sony doesn't play well with others, and it's just like, it, you're right, one of the things I'm really worried about is like the accessibility to controller, where Microsoft hopes that that is accessible not only obviously to PC and Xbox but to other platforms as well. Right now it seems like Nintendo probably won't have any problem with that, and Sony will probably make up some weak excuse about why they can't. Like,
well,
I could see them using the touchpad on the PlayStation 4 controller as a reason. We don't want to support this because it doesn't have this one thing that our controller does, and so your experience will be bad because of that. It's like, let gamers choose, you know.
Well,
like, if they play a game and it doesn't work well with that controller, like, whatever, let them have the option to choose that.
I feel like the accessibility controller on the Switch is going to be awful, because if it happens, it's going to be awful because the Switch is not built around, I mean, there's the Pro controller and I understand that, but how many games on the Switch and Chad's yelling at his whatever he's listening on right now. Because I'm about to say, how many games on the Switch use the Pro Controller really well? I mean, that's not really how it's built, I don't think.
Yeah. Well, it depends on what you play, because I don't have a pro controller, but every game that I've played on the Switch, for the most part, is what it would work well with a pro controller. It's just standard controls. With okay. like Zelda has the little bit of motion controls with it that I just didn't like the bow and arrow stuff that I tried to use, but you don't have to use. And if you just shut that off in the preferences, like it goes away. Stuff like that. The games that I care about don't do that. Now, something like what's that game called? Snipper Clips, I think, is whatever it is. That funny little random game that I play with the sexy sidekick, where you take the Joy-Cons on, and each one, if you have has a Joy-Con, like that is a little bit more set up to Switch. But even that, I would imagine, would work with like the accessibility controller. Still, just basic controls, and so it's only an issue if there's like a touchscreen element, which for the most part, I haven't found Switch games that are dependent on that, because you can play the thing docked, and so if you make it dependent on that, you lose one of the kind of selling points of the console, that it can go between these two worlds. And I haven't played very many Switch games that are dependent on motion controls, which of course the Joy-Cons do that as well, but it's not necessary for anything that outside of a few like party games. So there was a like 1-2 Switch, which is the like gimmicky little show off how things work. That one's like all motion controls or whatever, but that's a gimmicky little party game. That's not a serious game that we would play on a regular basis. And so I think for the stuff that we would play, the accessibility controller would probably work just fine on the Switch. I think the touchpad thing on the PlayStation would be more of an issue. Maybe. I don't know. Not a lot of games utilize that either, to be honest with you. You know, like it's a cool little thing, and there's a few games that use it for a kind of nifty little whatever in the game, but nothing that really depends on it. And so that would be a poor excuse as well.
Yeah, and like I said, I have a feeling that what's going to happen is Microsoft releases it, Sony says no and makes their own. So yeah. Then I got to buy another one.
Right.
So, because.
Thanks, Sony.
What I really want is to play PlayStation.
Right.
Like, that's what I really want. So.
Yeah, those are the games we care about. And Sony has that power. And they're kind of douchey about it, if I'm being honest. Like, we love Sony. I said Sony had the best press conference at E3 and on and on. But they're kind of douchey.
Yeah, they are. it's like I say, we live in the United States. We are a capitalist country. Yes. It is their right to be able to do this. I'm totally behind that. But why?
Yeah. You have a right to be douchey, and consumers have a right to push back.
Because I will tell you this as an example, and a company that does an excellent job with customer service, and I'm not saying it because I'm a fanboy. I am a fanboy, but Valve does an excellent job with customer service and working with their customers to get what they want. I'm excited to see what Valve does with the accessibility controller, because who knows?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's absolutely fair. Sony is not that company, and they never have been. They're just a little bit different, and that's too bad. Speaking of Nintendo, though, really quick, one other note from Nintendo, since you brought up Switch more there. Nintendo, believe it or not, you would not know this from listening to our 25-minute show or whatever we did about the Nintendo press conference, but Nintendo attracted more attention on Twitter during E3 than the other guys did. And Super Smash Brothers was obviously the dominant element of that. So further examples of how Nintendo can do whatever the crap they want and they're going to be okay. There you go.
I don't know. How do you even notate that?
Like, I know.
is there some guy in a room somewhere with like a computer and a big screen, and he's watching Twitter and he's like, okay, Microsoft's trending with like 18 stories, and Nintendo's trending with like 30 stories, and like, that's the weirdest metric I've ever heard, but whatever.
Yeah. Again, God bless Nintendo for continuing to be a big deal even when we don't get it. So good for them. One other quick Nintendo thing. Inside and Limbo, both are fantastic platformers. Both are coming to the Nintendo Switch later this week, early next week, sometime soon. So, yeah. The Switch is suddenly also the console that has these fantastic indie titles and platformers on it, and they just work well for the medium. Like, but I don't think anybody anticipated that, probably not even Nintendo, that the Switch would become the kind of platform for those kind of indie titles. But Inside on the Switch is the platform I think that game makes the most sense on ever. I think it'll just be amazing on that platform. So if you haven't played either one of those games, you should. They're just side-scrolling platformers that are dark and scary and really, really, really well done. And so those will be available on the Switch, and the Switch is doing that thing, which is strange. So one more thing on PlayStation 2 while we're talking about those. PlayStation 4 officially has their own PlayStation Hits collection. This was always a big deal in the past. It hadn't happened yet on the PlayStation 4, has officially now. So a bunch of big PlayStation 4 titles are now $20, including Uncharted 4, which I think is probably the biggest name amongst these. Metal Gear Solid 5 is also on that list. Doom, Bloodborne. I'm trying to think of anything else. The Last of Us Remastered, all of which are fantastic titles. If you haven't played any of those yet, you can go pick any one of those up for $20. So this is the time for cheap games, which is pretty great.
I say again, Last of Us Remastered, gotta have that.
Yes. One last thing we'll finish up on is with Bethesda. Let me tease a little bit because we're not going to, as usual, get through all these show notes. We got closer than you would have anticipated for our one-hour show. But go by the website, gaminguncensored.com, to see the stuff that we didn't get to, which will be Westworld-related. There is a Westworld Alexa game. So Alexa games are apparently a thing because you can play Skyrim on Alexa. Now there's also Westworld The Maze on Alexa. There's also a Westworld mobile game, and Bethesda is suing about it. And so those are fun stories. So if you want to see those, gaminguncensored.com. But one other thing with Bethesda really quick, about Fallout 76. And so really quickly, if you will indulge me, I want to give a shout out to a buddy of mine that I grew up with, hung out with a lot in junior high and high school, I played a lot of games with, like Final Fantasy VII. I and Nate, who's been on the show before, my buddy Nathan, played through Final Fantasy VII together. And that's my buddy Mike, who texted me this past week and said, "Hey man, I just found your podcast." I was like, "It's pretty good." I was like, "That's fantastic." So, hey Mike,
what's up, buddy?
So happy you're listening. And so he's like, "I subscribed and plan to listen," whatever. He's a big gamer still. We're all old and adults at this point. I have kids, myself included now on the kids thing. And so awesome. So glad that he's hanging out, listening to the show.
Did Mike happen to ask what the deal is with the drunk guy?
He didn't. That's good. Appreciate that. I bet he figured it out at this point. He was at college the same time we were. For at least part of our time we were in college. He was actually, now that I'm thinking back to it, he was actually in the broadcasting program at one point. And so you may have taken classes with Mike.
Dude, I bet I did. What's
before Mike? I was in the broadcasting department, but he was there a couple years before I was. So, yeah.
I would be very interested to do a little connect the dots now.
Right?
You got me interested. So
yeah, that just started spinning in my head. I didn't even consider that. So,
Mike! We need a segment, buddy. We'll tell you how to do that in a minute.
Yes. All that being said, the reason I brought up Mike is one of the pieces of feedback he sent me while we were texting back and forth was about our discussion of Fallout 76. And he said, the thing that you're missing about Fallout 76 is really simple, that it's you can play Fallout with your friends. And like, that's fair. We just didn't ever really talk about it in that kind of frame.
We don't have friends, so
that's also fair. But I mean, honestly, that's something that you and I will probably play this game together. We're going to be excited about playing Fallout 76 insofar as that we can play it together. And
yes.
That's a fair point. I'll bring up this other thing, the little bit of newsy thing about Fallout 76 really quick, too. Bethesda's talked a little bit more about the nuke thing. So nukes was a part of the press conference that people grasped onto. Bethesda says, essentially, nukes are going to be hard to get. You're going to have to do a lot of work to get them. It's not just going to be like, go find the code and then there you go. That there's going to be several components of the code. You're going to have to go seek them out. And then even when you do find the code, that it's not just like, and then you hit a button and you launch a nuke, that you're going to have to go to a specific place and there's going to be difficulties getting there and then actually launching the nuke, whatever. That's going to be hard to do. And then when you actually launch the nuke, that it's going to like let people know. And so you're not just going to suddenly be like blown up, you know, like you're going to have a chance to react. If like somebody is launching the nuke, there's going to be a countdown or a warning of some sort. And so you can get out of the blast radius, or if you're like shelter or hideouts there, you might be able to go and like get your gear before everything blows up or whatever. And so ultimately what Bethesda is trying to say is that there's going to be balance to this, that it will be a part of the game. It's going to be a significant part of the game. It's not just going to be stuff blowing up all the time. Like there's going to be a way that this works, and that maybe you want to go find the nukes and do stuff with it, but it's not just going to be something that you stumble upon and go, oh, cool, here's a button, hit it, and everything blows up.
Todd, can you get online and explain that, please? Because like, I don't want to hear from anybody else. Todd, wherever you're at, buddy, just fire up the webcam and tell us about that. Because, like, the nuke's going to be really cool until it happens to you. And then, right. And then like, that's not cool at all. So,
yeah,
there's that.
One of the things they talk about, and this is kind of a cool aspect of this. So obviously radiation is a big part of the Fallout universe. And so this is all actually, this isn't from Todd. This is from, Pete Hines at Bethesda talking about this. One of the things he talks about with the with launching the nukes is that ultimately, like, it's going to hit somewhere and there's going to be a blast radius. And obviously that's going to change the landscape and everything else. But that blast radius is going to become a, quote, hotbed of rare resources, loot, and creatures. But that doesn't last forever. And so there's going to be like a run probably after the nuke impacts, wherever it impacts at, everybody's then going to want to go there in order to get the good stuff or to fight the big creatures in order to get the best loot or whatever it is. And so it'll almost be this kind of push and pull thing that whenever it's being launched, you're going to want to get as far away as possible. But actually after the fact, that there's going to be an incentive for players to kind of come there, and that may end up making those kind of central areas of gameplay where either there's PvP stuff, whatever that looks like, or that there's a bunch of enemies that you can go and do kind of raids with or whatever. Whatever it is, at least it's not just like you're just blowing up the world the whole time.
I feel like that area, that blast area or whatever, would be an adequate example of that. It would be like an instance in World of Warcraft, is kind of the way I'm thinking about that.
Yeah, which is kind of cool. Like, I hadn't thought about it in those terms, but the idea that it'll actually be this kind of interactive thing, that's not just mass destruction and like then that place is off limits or whatever until it recovers, but like in the Fallout universe, like everything's radiated, and so a big area of radiation is actually makes perfect sense in the context of the game. And so that'll be fun. Maybe, I don't know. Still, I wonder if you can get like some heavy armor and just like go set up camp right in the middle of like the blast zone and like survive the nuke. I think that would be fun too.
That would be fun. And the only thing that I'm still wondering about is, am I gonna have the reflexes to play this adequately, or is there a way to set it up like a World of Warcraft type thing where I can play it adequately well based on my crippled reflexes? Because World of Warcraft was not that hard. Like, you have your hotkeys, you hit a button, off you go. But Fallout 76 looks like a first-person shooter. And if it is, that ain't happening. Like, I'm going to get torched.
Yeah, I'm interested, obviously fascinated to see what they do with this thing. I hope it's fun. We'll play it, and we'll definitely have opinions about it. So come back in 5 or 6 months, and you'll hear about it for sure. Absolutely. Come back before then. Don't wait 5 or 6 months to come back and listen to the show.
Mike, thank you for chiming in, buddy. That's That's good stuff. We like that. Text Tommy whenever. I think it's a miracle you got the man to answer. That's all I'm saying. It's good to have you.
It still took me a day at a time, but I did get back to him. Right. You know how that goes.
Yes, I do. I do so very much. I do. So, yeah.
And we're an hour in, so here we go.
Here we go. So he says that because he's like, okay, hour in, time to wrap up. And my brain's like, holy crap, we just started.
It's crazy.
We want your feedback. If there's things that we can do to make it better, please let us know, gaminguncensored@gmail.com or the voicemail line at
509-GAME-210. Like Jamie said, there's growing pains to this. We're figuring this out. So yes, feedback is definitely valuable. We've done one now. We're figuring it out. Next one will hopefully be better and better after that, and progressively so.
Because right now my head is spinning. So yeah,
it's weird. We've done something the same way for 13 years, and now we're changing it.
So. Right. So definitely give us feedback there. That's also where you can submit segments, which we need. I don't know how we're going to fit segments into an hour show, but we'll
do something.
We're going to figure it out. Because segments is what has always made this show work, and that's not changing. So please, please, please submit a segment. We want to hear from you guys. This thing is all about you guys. So please do not hesitate to do that. Go by the Twitter, go by the Facebook, go by where else?
Patreon, let me mention Patreon really yes. quick. Lots and lots and lots of content. We still got E3 content going up, and so it's a good time to contribute over at Patreon. If you haven't yet and thought about it, or haven't thought about it, and now you're thinking about it, GamingUncensored.com, Patreon link right there at the top of the page. And I'll put out the same call we did during E3. Please review us on whatever services you get this podcast from, or go to other services that you don't get this podcast from and review us there. Give us some reviews. That helps people find the show. We want more people as part of the community, and so yeah, we'd appreciate it a ton.
Other than that, I think that's it. Is there anything else, sir?
We survived, my friend. See you next week.
That's so weird. Same bad time, same bad channel kids. For right now, I'm Jamie. That's Tommy. We're Gaming Uncensored, and we are out.
Would you like to submit a segment for the show? Send it to gaminguncensored@gmail.com. And don't worry, we'll play just about anything. Gaming Uncensored.